approved, Barry. We're ready to start whenever you are. I think you have some author's amendments. We're short of a quorum, so if you want to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a speedy committee to get down here so fast and have a quorum. This is the... I'm not on the committee, Mr. Chair, so if someone else wants to move the bill.
Again, we don't have a quorum, so we can't move the bill yet.
I thought you said you did. Oh, just explain it. Okay.
If you want to start.
All right, well, I am assuming at this time of night, this committee really wants to focus on the tax provisions of the education finance bill. So the main thing to keep in mind is that the total statewide education finance levies are unchanged in this bill. There is no change to the total statewide levies. But that they are, under current law, and I should ask, do you all have this handout that I'm going from? Okay. They are, however, projected to increase due to expected levy referendums. And the bill, due to the lack of keeping up with inflation since 1991 and the flat funding that we've had for quite a while, our committee, while we do not like to rely on local levies, we like to rely on state funding. Since we're short of that, mm-hmm. for this hard economic times, we're allowing school districts to renew existing local operating referenda by a vote of the school board. And that is paid for, and Representative Garofalo is on this committee, so if there's questions on that, it's paid for by a bill of his.
Representative, I'm just going to interrupt you for a minute. We do have a quorum now. Representative Garofalo, do you want to move House File 2431?
No.
All right, Representative Tilbury, well then. You're going to present it, for God's sake. Representative Tilbury moves House File 2431. Representative Garofalo, do you want to do the amendments that you have first?
Mr. Chair, I think Representative Markport, I don't have any author's amendments.
You don't have? Okay, great.
But I know Representative Markport has an amendment that I've discussed with him, but that's not an author's amendment.
Okay. All right. If you want to continue with your walkthrough then.
Okay. And then, as I said, this the renewing of the existing levy referenda by school board vote is paid for by Representative Garofalo's early graduation incentive bill, which saves most of the money that the levy referendum provision costs, about $2.1 million for that, and his bill saves about three-fourths of that. And then the rest of it is paid for by the equalizing factor calculation in the capital operating capital levy with more aid and less levy, but does not change anything at the local level. It doesn't cost them anything. And then there's the shift in the bill that this committee may be familiar with, going from 90-10 for the aid payment shift to 73-27 and for the property tax recognition shift, recognizing 47.8% of the property tax revenue for the current fiscal year instead of the next fiscal year. Two other provisions. One is the ballot question, which is Representative Dabney's bill, who isn't here yet, I guess, but changing, clarifying that levy renewal questions for a new project at the same rate is a renewal of an existing capital project referendum levy and will not raise the operating referendum tax compared to the previous year. And then there's a technical change to the OPEB levies that is so technical it was actually in the revisor's bill last year. But that, as you recall, we ran out of time for that bill. And then the final provision that of interest to the tax committee is eliminating the statute that was used this year by Governor Pawlenty to borrow for the state's cash flow from the school's cash flow. It had never been used before, and because there's already a capping and proration of special education funding, and then we have the property tax recognition shift and the aid payment shift, our committee thought that was enough borrowing from schools, and so we repealed that law. And Mr. Chair, I would stand for questions on those provisions unless you want to go straight to amendments, but that's the highlights, in fact, the total inclusion of the provisions that relate to the tax committee.
Right. Thank you, Representative Greiling. Representative Markler, do you have a preference? Do you want to do your amendment now, or should we?
Mr. Chair, it's late at night. We might as well get going. So I do have an amendment. I don't have it with me right now, so if they could pass that around. And I don't know the number of it, but yeah, I don't have a copy, but I can.
Other than that, we're ready.
So we'll wait till the copy gets passed around, and then I'll move the amendment.
Representative Markler, do you want to start?
I will start explaining it then. So, well, what this does, this will amend the portion that is the automatic renewal of the operating referendum. This puts in a reverse referendum. So one of the concerns is that, first of all, well, let me just tell you what it does. Is this would put a reverse referendum in that says that after 60 days of the school board making the decision to extend the levy, that citizens would have 60 days, 30% of the registered voters would have to have a petition. They would come forward with that. And if they were successful with that, there then would be a referendum revocation vote is what I think it's called in November. So this does give people yet, if they object, you know, to right to vote on this referendum. Now, members, you know, this is a tough one, no doubt. The fact that school funding has been flat has really put a lot of school districts in a very tough situation. And some of the school districts have some very large referendums per pupil. And a lot of times we think those are in the metro area. But the fact of the matter is, if you look at the excess referendums over $1,500 per pupil, 20 of the 32 are in rural Minnesota. In fact, four of them are referendums over $2,000 per student, all of them in rural Minnesota, including the top, well, two of those four are in my district. Campbell Tinta has an excess referendum of $3,450 per student, which means if for some reason they were not able to pass a referendum, and with property taxes increasing, with cuts to local government and everything else that's put pressure on these school districts, that school district would lose about 40% of its revenue overnight. That basically would probably end these schools in rural Minnesota. So this isn't just a metro issue that some may think. It's a very, very important rural issue. And the bottom line is we need to look at equity for our students. Right now we have 10% of our districts do not have a referendum. Pelican Rapids, which I have a part of, referendum failed yesterday. They had a mail-in ballot, failed about 53-47. That's their third attempt. They don't have one, but they've been unable to pass them, and they're becoming more difficult statistically. So what this does still is that if a district wants to extend that referendum, it is still subject to a reverse referendum, so people still have the right to vote if they get the right amount of petitions. So that is my amendment, members, and ask for your support.
Representative Rucavina.
Mr. Chair, looking around the table here, I think I've been here longer than anybody.
Carlson's going to stay.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I'm sitting around the table, and I know I have the longest seniority on this committee. And Representative Marquardt, maybe you can explain to us, as the powerful chair of the Property Tax Division, Tax Committee, why is it that the only people that we get to vote against are kids? Why don't we get to vote against the county jail or expansion of the police force or the city building a new city hall? Why do we get to just vote against the kids? Can you explain that to me?
Yes, Mr. Chair, before I answer that, I would like to officially move the House 2431A58 amendment to get that on the table.
Representative Markhart moves the H2431A58 amendment.
Representative Rucavina, I don't know if I know the answer, but it is only education where it's in the Constitution that you have to have uniform funding. There's not a required uniform funding in the Constitution for cities or counties. And I think the idea is that if you totally, the more you rely, as you know, on property taxes, the more the inequities become, especially if you're relying on a vote. And so that would be, I don't know if that's why that is, or why the legislation came about, but that would be my argument, is that if we just let school districts just raise revenue any way they wanted, you would have the property-rich district doing it much easily, and being able to have a lot better education, where cities and counties, at least in the Constitution, are not required to be equal.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know if that's the reason.
But I don't, yeah.
Do you think it's right that we only get to vote against our kids?
Representative Marquardt.
Should we have a reverse referendum for county squad cars? I can tell you my constituents would vote no.
Well, Representative Rukavina, were you here last night for the vote on the local option sales tax? Shared a little debate on equalization, which I stand for. But I don't think that's a vote against children as much as you're trying to maintain equality for every student in the state, regardless of where you live. And so I do think there's certainly a fine point where you've got to weigh some things, but that would be my defense of that.
Representative Rukavina, you're making it a little harder for Representative Greiling to what she wants to do in her bill by offering this amendment, right? So this is kind of just a little vote against the kids versus a big one, right?
Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, it's a little more effort to keep education equality for students around the state. That's what I'm trying to do with this.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, I think maybe we're with the chair. I don't know where she's probably in finance. Right?
She's right behind you.
Oh, there she is.
Just ditching
you. So, the chair, I think, in her district, if she puts a 1% operating levy in her district for her schools, I think it raises about maybe $1 million, and then a 1% operating levy on our total property wealth in the Virginia school district, I think raised about $30,000. Where is their equity there?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, of course, there's equalization in your operating referendum based on your market value. So you've got the equalization.
Not to the tune of that.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Marker, I'm just kind of having fun pimping.
Yeah.
The point being this, member. All we ever get to vote against on our local property taxes is our kids. I don't know how it ever came to that. It's either should be we get to vote against everybody and everything, or nobody, or nothing. But think about it. The only thing we get to do when we go to the polls to oppose something is vote against our kids. We don't get to vote against those $60,000 cop cars that they take home every night now. No, we can't vote against that. No, I vote against it.
Members, other discussion. Representative Hillstrom.
Mr. Chair, would it be appropriate now to move an amendment to the amendment?
No.
Do we have copies of the amendment?
I think they have it over there.
All right. We can get that distributed. In the meantime, is there other discussion to the Marquardt amendment? All right. If we can get the Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While we're waiting for the paper to come around, I can just say that I don't like the referendums at all. And the original Minnesota Miracle way back in the 70s, the concept was that the state and the property taxes provided an adequate education. And the only reason for the referendums was so that some very wealthy school districts would be able to keep some of their special programs that nobody else had, and they had to prove that the voters really valued them enough that they'd pay extra taxes. But it was supposed to be for the frills. So it was never supposed to be about voting against the kids. It was supposed to be about voting for the frills that weren't part of a core educational experience statewide. And I wish we were still back at that.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Representative Hillstrom, if you want to move your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the A64 amendment, which is an amendment to the Representative Marquardt's A58 amendment. Members, one of the challenges that we have in my school district is that our levy has already expired, and so we would not be eligible for this renewal. And so this amendment would allow school districts where more than 60% of the district's enrollments are eligible for free or reduced lunch meals that had a referendum that expired between January 2004 and January 1 of 2010, if the levy has not yet been renewed, would be allowed to renew the levy in the same manner as the other districts. And I would encourage members' support.
Thank you, Representative. Discussion on the amendment to the A58 amendment.
No.
Representative Anderson?
Yes.
Representative Loon?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Oh, just a question to Representative Hillstrom. So to renew a referendum that expired between January 1st, 2004, so it's your intention to make this retroactive? A referendum that went back several years ago?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, it wouldn't make it retroactive. It would just say we could do that amount going forward as everyone else is going to get to put their levies on going forward without a vote.
Representative Loon, other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A64 amendment to the A5A amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment passes. So we're back on the A58 amendment as amended. Further discussion? Further discussion? Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think, I'm sorry, we were doing the tax bill in Ways and Means, and I understand this is the Marquardt amendment?
Correct.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I may, I don't want folks who are here who kind of heard via the grapevine my position to think I'm trying to hide it. I'm also not trying to change the outcome of the K-12 bill, but I don't support the Marquardt Amendment. I understand there's folks trying to find a compromise here between, having some ability by the voters to do a reverse as opposed to none. But, I don't want people to think I'm trying to dodge this, and so I want to put on the record that I don't think we should be having these renew without a vote of the people. I do understand Representative Rucavina's arguments about why do we make people vote on that. On the other hand, I know our school districts and our superintendents, including mine, and the school boards would like us to, let this happen. But the residents of our communities are not asking us to do this, and I think they would. They are used to having the ability to vote on the local portion. They don't vote on the state portion, which is the majority of the funding for the schools happens at the state level without referendum for all of our school districts. And so I oppose this, but I wanted to be clear because I know a number of people have been concerned about my position, and I didn't want to just let it be quiet so that I was being honest about my position on the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Wojcicki. Other discussion on the A5A amendment? So now we'll call for the vote. All those in favor of the A5A amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The amendment passes. Other amendments? Are there any other amendments? Seeing none, I will open it up for other discussion. Representative Garland, did you have further comments on the bill?
Mr. Chair, if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them. I know it's late and people would like to go home, so I appreciate your expediency, and I would hope people would support the bill. I would have, like Representative Rucavina, preferred not to have the amendment, but I think that it makes more people comfortable having this option for school districts, so I think that definitely improvement will still help. So thank you to Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Representative. Before I open it up to members, is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify on this bill? Second call for anyone from the public that wants to testify. All right. Seeing none, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one comment for everyone. One of the things that is done in this bill is to raise the equalization level on operating capital, which means that school districts will pay less in levy and the state will put more in aid. So, for example, the 10% of the school districts that right now have no referendum, they will see a slight property tax levy decrease. And then also all the districts that right now are not extending theirs, so they might be in the second year or 5 years, they will also experience a slight property tax decrease versus current law. So actually a majority of the school districts, because of what Representative Dreiling did on the operating capital, will see a slight, it's, you know, probably 3 or 4 million statewide. It's slight, but actually a property tax decrease under current law.
So. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just trying to find in the spreadsheet where the specific numbers are related to the tails in this bill.
Representative Garland, is that something you can help us out with?
Representative Broad, are you speaking about there's no levy changes in the tails? You can see on the thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, you're speaking about the appropriation and the new Minnesota miracle. Okay. That is the bill that is in here. It does not begin until 2014. And there is definitely a cost for that. And the reason that is in the bill is because we have federal dollars. They will go away. We're applying for the race to the top. I think that's a long shot, but we're working earnestly on that, and that will go away. So this is part of what we had in our bill last year that takes up the slack in 2014. Obviously, any new legislature can change that. Some of us, you know, including yourself, you know, will not be here at that time, but it then leaves education in the general fund as a placeholder, because if you look at not too long ago, we were 42% of the budget, and now we're down to 37%. And sinking, there was some talk on the House floor today about what is happening with health care costs. And we all know that those costs are rising, and we're trying to mitigate that. But when you have some costs rising and there's dedicated funding for major portions of the budget, transportation, health care access fund, now we have the legacy fund and arts and environment. But education is just trying to keep its place in the general fund, and we're not keeping our place. So this would put education in there to be discussed. It could always be changed, lowered, raised, but that's why that's in there. And there are tails to it, but it's meant to be phased in, and it can be modified by any legislature. But that way education doesn't get to be the budget balancer saved for last. It gets to be discussed right along with the rest of the budget early on, which I think is something many of us would agree on.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Chair Greiling. Do we have an estimation of what that is going to cost in 2014, did you say, or 13?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, it would start out costing $600 million. When it would be fully implemented, it would be up to $1.8 billion. So you see that it has to be discussed by the legislature at the time. But when it was put forward by PS Minnesota, which is all the school groups in the state, they were looking at the fact that we haven't kept up with inflation since 1991, and how much if we'd been getting increases all along instead of no increases or even actual cuts in 2003, what would it be that we should have gotten? And then what would it be if we kept on getting what we should get? And they considered it a Chevy model as to what it would cost to get all the kids ready for graduating from high school, ready for success. And if you want to know the exact years, or besides the $600 million in the first year, Mr. Crow has just given me the exact numbers, which I guess you, Mr. Chair and members, Representative Broad, wants. In 2014, it is the $600 million. 2015, it's $1.2 billion. 2016, $1.8 billion. And 17, $2.4
billion. Representative Broad.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greiling, is that cumulative?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, that's the each annual expense.
Representative Broad?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Greiling, does it give you any pause to put spending in the amounts that you're putting in the bill? I mean, the spending is in the bill, but it's not accounted for. Does it give you any pause that $600 million and $1.8 billion are unfunded in terms of the liability, on top of the liability that we all know is out there related to the OPEB benefits that we're requiring? I think I remember the state auditor saying that those benefits, the liability is equal about $13,000 per student. And this liability is significant. And I guess I'm concerned about the fact that we're just saying that we're going to put the policy in law, but you know what? We're just not going to worry about how to fund it. And, you know, we're not going to mess with this bill too much tonight. But it just seems to me that that's a really, really concerning policy for us to be putting forward. That's significant spending, $1.8 billion, $2.4 billion on top of the $5 billion or $6 billion that we know we're going to have as deficit. I mean, you just can't tax enough, even if you wanted to actually accomplish that. So I guess I just wanted to know that if there's some pause being given to the concern over those numbers.
Representative Grubin.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Broad. It gives me pause to know that we're that far behind. That's how far behind we are from if we had kept up with inflation since 1991, and how much we're asking our schools to do, that we want all the kids to be able to graduate ready for success, and this is what it costs. If we don't want to spend this amount of money, then we should back off and stop having all the testing that we require, all the accountability and expecting all these things from students, and we expect our schools to do many more things than just teach the basics. So, you know, you can't just put forward all the policies in the world that are coming from actually Washington, D.C. right now, as well as Governor Pawlenty and all of us here in the legislature, and expect to have the schools do it for free. Many of us on the education committee came from the school board. We hear a hue and cry of, you know, what are they supposed to cut out? And so, you know, you have to put your money where your mouth is, and I definitely am very proud that we've costed out how far behind we are, so we can start looking. I'm very saddened that we can't start looking at this until 2014. But I think I'm very proud, and I think the Education Committee, by and large, is that we know what it costs, we know how far behind we are, and we have a placeholder here in hopes that we should right our ship by 2014, and once again, can start investing in our children. Our state economist and our state demographer say that the best way to turn around the economy is to actually invest in our children. That's what companies come here for. Governor Pawlenty spoke yesterday at something for the Chamber of Commerce, and I read in the business section of one of the newspapers this morning that he spent a lot of time talking about our educated workforce before he went into cutting regulations for businesses. But he spent a lot of time bragging about Minnesota doing well on test scores, our educated workforce, and that is why companies want to come here, and that is why companies stay here. But it's not going to be for long if we don't get a handle on our achievement gap and making sure all our kids graduate ready for success. This is a need-based formula that will take into account what does it cost for kids who don't speak English, for kids who are special ed, for kids who are poor, to have the same opportunities as we do. It also makes the cost differentials for other areas of the state be equal. Someone mentioned here that you know, referendums were meant for the rich districts to have some extras, but unfortunately now 90% of our districts do have referendums, and they need them just for the basics. If they would lose them, which is why we have this provision in here, which we don't like in the Education Committee either, it's because there would be rack and ruin all around the state for any district that could not renew their levy referendum. And it's coming to that. Even property wealthy districts like mine, I represent three of them, just barely every year can pass their levies by less and less, where, you know, someday soon, we will not be able to pass our levies in Moundsview, Roseville, and St. Anthony, New Brighton. So what about the other districts that don't have property wealth? It's not a good trend. We need to turn it around. There's also in here debt service equalization, which many of the rural districts need. There is innovation revenue and reform, which the business groups like the chamber really like, of the new revenue. So I am not going to apologize, Representative Broad, for this bill. I'm very proud of it. Every education group behind me is very proud of it and supports it. There isn't a group in the state that does not support it and need it. And so I wish you could come sometime when we have hearings in the Education Committee and hear how this money is needed and what is happening in our schools. So, no, I'm not at all given pause by this. I'm given pause that we have to wait till 2014 to start.
Representative Downey.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe just a quick follow-on on that. Representative Garling, so the expenditures that you mentioned out through 2017, those are now in, if this bill would pass in its current form, those expenditure commitments would now be in our base. Is that correct? So these would be expenditure commitments on behalf of the state. These aren't just, gee, I wish. I mean, this actually goes into the base projected budget in the future.
Representative Garland?
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, we would have to actually vote on these things because they're projections, and we could change them in any way. If anybody wanted to say that we don't want to give money to schools, then we could make those changes. But yes, this is in the part. We would have to vote to cut education before we before we change this. And that's the dynamic that I think we need to have if we're going to do right by our children. Right now, we keep doing the education bill last after we've done all the other budget bills, and we have borrowed to the tune right now to our schools of nearly $3 billion. We have the shifts that are in here. We have the $600 million that we owe for special ed. And then lately this year we started a new thing which is repealed in this bill, is which is borrowing from the cash flow from our schools. $423 million. It will be paid back on May 30th by law, but come fall we will be borrowing that again. And so to put education into the base where we have to actually take a vote and be ashamed of ourselves when we cut that, I think is the dynamic that we really need, or we're always going to do stadiums, which are being heard somewhere in this building. We're always going to continue with things like ethanol subsidies and so forth. Those things pop back into the budget and always get ahead of the school kids. So, yes, to your question.
Thank you, Representative Grada. We have Davids, then Demmer, then Anderson, and committee members. I'll just remind us to let's stay focused on the tax provisions.
Mr.
Representative
Chair,
Davids.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Donald.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Garling, so those are in the base. And then is there a kind of traditional inflationary or other formula driven increase in the existing base budget of our approximately $13 billion schools budget, in addition to the Minnesota Miracle provisions, or does what you just described comprise all of the base increases for K-12 between now and 2017?
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, education doesn't have any inflationary increases in the bill in the current situation. In the new Minnesota Miracle, it does. So once again, the basic formula would have an inflationary increase, so that legislators would have to vote, no, we're not going to give schools an inflationary increase this year. And legislators could do that. That's the dynamic we have in the health care bill with the health care access fund. You know, they have their 2% set aside, replenishing that fund continuously. I think that's a really good thing for that health and human services bill, because look at what we just did to that I had to vote for on the House floor today. But we don't have that for education right now. There's just plain old flat funding and borrowing, and it's a real cut. So there's nothing in the bill that we have before us that would do anything with inflation, but there is in the new Minnesota Miracle. Again, we could We could undo it with a vote, but we have to undo it with a vote.
Representative Downey?
Mr. Chair, if I could then. So just a follow-up question. I was hoping maybe Representative Carlson or Solberg would be here, but maybe for Representative Lenchesky. So with these kinds of kind of built-in committed projected expenditures in education, and we know what happens in the Health and Human Services budget from what we just saw with Representative Kiffmeyer's spreadsheet in the out years, do we have any obligation from a Ways and Means or from a kind of a budget balancing perspective to actually begin also projecting the tax increases or the revenue structures to support these expenditures, or we can just do nothing on the tax side and allow the expenditure side from a projection standpoint to just have these built-in increases in these out years?
Mm-hmm. Chair Lenchesky?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Downey. I'm probably not a good person asking that, but I would just opine that, you know, we forecast in law. I mean, whatever's in the law is what has to be forecasted. So anything that gets passed into law is then built into the forecast. As far as funding it, you know, we can cut other stuff to pay for it, or we can raise taxes, or we can repeal tax expenditures. There's lots of options there to get there. I don't think it's a guaranteed tax increase, but, you know, there's many ways folks could come to it.
Mr. Chair, if I could, thank you. And maybe I didn't say the question properly. So when we look at our out years in the tax committee, do we not have to show the projected revenue side to equal the projected expenditure side in those out years, so we can just go forward from here on a hope and a prayer that somehow revenue will materialize with no projection in our spreadsheets to match these kind of unprecedented increases on the expenditure side, and so we just build in this imbalance and this budget deficit that we're struggling with next year, and it appears we'll be struggling with all the way out to 2017, if I'm understanding this right?
I saw a no followed by a yes, but Chair Lenchesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, and if nonpartisan staff wants to add clarification, I guess, you know, that's right. I mean, no, because there's no commitment that revenues have to line up with anything that's going on the finance side. So, and they don't go down when things go down either. I mean, the income tax, we don't change the rates as things are going. They just are in the three brackets, and unless we act to raise or lower income taxes or raise or lower the sales tax, it just comes in. And then we have, that's what will create, you know, future decisions for future folks to sit in these chairs.
Mr. Michael, do you want to add anything to that?
No.
Representative Davids. Then Demmer, then Anderson, then Ruth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's unfortunate that the chair of the Education Committee took a shot at ethanol, putting ethanol versus kids. I won't tell your relatives in Fillmore County, I promise. Just a couple quick questions. I want to get my arms around this just a bit. Does anyone, maybe staff could help me, or Mr. Kroll, what percentage of school districts have declining enrollments at this point?
Representative Gladwin or Mr. Crow?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to have Mr. Crow help me, but it is the majority.
Yep.
Mr. Crow, you want to introduce yourself for the tape?
And both
Mr. Chair, Representative and the members, I'm Greg Crow from the Fiscal Analysis Department. Roughly 70%.
70? Okay. Mr. Chair and Mr. Crow, what's the student population in 2010 here in our public schools in Minnesota? K-12, and what is it projected to be in 2015?
Mr. Chair, Representative David, about 800, and if you use a head count, about 825,000-830,000, and it's projected to be pretty flat for the next few years on a statewide basis.
So probably about the same in 2015. Okay, thank you.
Representative David, more?
Yeah, you know, 70%, I've just got some concerns here. 70% of our schools are in declining enrollments. The school population is going to be 825,000, or it is 825,000 today. In 2015, it's 825,000. Yet in 2015, we're spending $1.6 billion more for the same number of students. And I guess my biggest concern looking at this right now, members, is, and maybe this is for Mr. Michaels, if you could help here. I went to freshman orientation, and I learned in freshman orientation that one... the one last year, not 91. It it was pounded in our heads by Mr. Simon and Kathy Tingelstad and others that helped there. They said one legislature cannot bind a future legislature. So would it be somewhat odd to be passing a bill for expenditures in 2013, 14, and 15? Or how does that procedurally work, Mr. Michaels?
Mr. Michaels?
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, it certainly is true that, and I think Representative Greiling was sort of making this point, that each legislature as it comes along can change any of the, any of the existing laws. And so, yes, you can enact a funding formula that you expect a future legislature will actually come up with the fiscal resources to pay for, but if that future legislature decides to do something else, it can certainly do that. So essentially all this is doing is enacting a law that can be changed.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Representative David.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members, I think it's somewhat odd to be passing a bill that binds future legislatures and putting them in a situation where it's going to be impossible for them to come up with the funding. But that's I did pay attention in freshman orientation, and that's what I learned.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Davids, for the committee members who do not know, he's down in the big hornet's nest of my relatives, and they seem to vote for him. But I would say, Representative Davids, there is, you mentioned ethanol, so that brings up a very good example of another type of funding that binds future legislatures and goes out into the out years, and it gets ahead of our school children every year.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Greiling, the ethanol payments are 1/100th of the Roseville School District's budget. I mean, come on. I mean, that's not really fair. I mean, we're talking about, what, $3 million this year, whatever it is. It's maybe $10 million. And we're saying ethanol is getting ahead of our kids? Well, so is public safety, and so is health and human services. So to single out one thing that's very important for my district and say that's getting ahead of kids, I think is just a bit disingenuous when everything else is getting ahead of kids also.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Garland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Davids, but things like the public safety budget just gets done for the next biennium. I was talking about the principle of going ahead more than one or two bienniums like ethanol has done.
Right. Representative Demmer, then Anderson, then Rood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greiling, I'm kind of along the same lines as Representative Davids, and I do serve on K-12, as you know, and I've been there for quite some time, but for the benefit of those who don't, could you tell us a little bit about funding on a per-student basis, Representative Greiling? Say, let's take the last five bienniums. What's student funding per student done in the last five bienniums? And if you need help from one of the staff, I'm sure they can tell us what that is. Let's talk flat dollars here now.
Representative Greiling?
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, you serve on education finance, so you know as well as I that it's about $5,124 per pupil, that's been flat for the last 4 years, and maybe you're going to go to the time when it was four and four. Is that the point you're trying to make?
Well, Representative Greiling, you're the one on the stand that I'm asking the questions right now. And what I asked you is what the funding has done on a per student basis.
Representative Greiling.
Order.
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, I'm trying to answer your question. Are you talking about the $5,124 per pupil, or
you said
are you
that's been flat,
Representative Demmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greiling, you said that's been flat the last 4 years, so it's not gone down. What was it prior to that?
Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, I think since you're in such an argumentative mood, I am going to ask Mr. Crow, because I might get something wrong, and then you've obviously got the figures right in front of you. So if you're going to play the gotcha game, I would ask Mr. Crow to come up and answer.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Demmer, let's all stay in a productive mode. We do have a midnight deadline that we need to work with, and that's for everybody. So. Representative Demmer, do you want questions to Mr.
Sure.
Crow?
I got to respond to that. Representative Greiling spent about 10 minutes telling us about all the funding decreases in education. I think for those who aren't sitting in K-12 committee, he'd have some understanding. because Representative Greiling was telling about all the decreases we've had in education funding, and I think we need to get facts on the table. That's all I'm asking for is facts. Okay. And so that's what I'm asking for, because people need to know what education funding on a per-student basis has done. People need to know what our student population, that's what I'm going to ask next, what has the student population done in that last 6 to 8 years? And also, have we cut education? Because Representative Grady was talking about cuts to education, and I want to know, I want to hear the dollars, because I get a chance to see these things, but a lot of the members here don't. And there was lots of talk and lots of discussion from Representative Greiling about all the cuts to education. So let's get the numbers on the table, Mr. Chair, so that everybody knows what they are. Because, and then I'm also going to ask what Representative Greiling knows about ethanol, because I'd like to hear about that too, since you brought that up. So,
Representative Demmer, I'm not going to get into anything about ethanol or E85 or anything. I'm not running for governor or lieutenant governor, so I don't have to answer that.
Well, you also don't think Representative Greiling and Representative Demmer that's pertinent to our conversation before taxes tonight. So.
But Representative Demmer, I'm talking about education not keeping up with inflation over time since 1991. And so when you don't keep up with inflation, but energy costs go up, and the cost of salaries goes up, and everything is having a cost. There's a reason why we have implicit price deflator calculations on school districts. Then you can't, you haven't actually made an actual cut, but it's not keeping up with inflation, so it, in essence, is a cut for the students. The actual cuts that we had were in 2003. It was the first time education had been cut in the history of the state in people's memories, and that was $185 million. And it was right when people were saying, we need to make sure that we don't leave any children behind. And so what did we do in 2003 when we cut $185 million? We cut extended time revenue. We knew that was a bad idea, and our legislative auditor this year told us what a really bad idea it was, because you get your money for time on task, time in the school day, time on the weekend, time after school. There's some sort of leverage that goes on, especially with kids who aren't learning well, if they get more time. But that was cut in 2003, and guess what, Representative Demmer, you know, but this committee might not know, it's still cut. It's that cut was put in, and it has not been restored. It's frozen since 2003, and that's a criminal thing, and that's restored in the new Minnesota Miracle, as Representative Demmer knows. We also cut and capped and prorated, and we're still doing it, but we raised the cap somewhat, special education. That's $600 million that we owe to our schools for the cross-subsidy for special education. And if we would merely pay that portion of the new Minnesota Miracle, most school districts could do what Representative Loeffler and I would like to do, which is get rid of levy referendums. That's roughly equivalent to the entire statewide cost of levy referendums, is what we owe our schools just for special ed alone. We also eliminated the Teacher of Color program. There, we cut the funding for alternative schools, which was also part of the extended time revenue. And it seems to me we also cut, help me out here, Representative Dabney.
Cap ELL at 5 years.
The English language learners, which are also students that we need to get up from the achievement gap. And that money we did restore, but not the money for extended time. So all the things that expand the achievement gap were just what was cut. And so Representative Demmer, you know those things, and but you wanted me to repeat them, so I did.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greiling, I'll ask again, what were the first student funding? You did a nice job answering what you wanted to say. You didn't answer my question. What was the funding on a per student basis? You said it's $5,125 in the last 4 years. What was it prior to that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, that I said, and I'm guessing you have it right in front of you, but that if you wanted to hear those exact numbers, then we could invite up Mr. Crowe.
Yes, I'd like to hear that.
Mr. I have them all straight since I've been the chair. But, you know, when I was in the minority, I Mr. was Crowe. Not ever on a conference committee, even though I was a lead. I'm sure to let Representative Graflo, so he learns as he goes. I couldn't hardly get my bills heard. I do hear Republican bills when I'm the chair. I've learned a lot of things. But so I'm kind of in the dark as to what you did. But I know there was a four and a four at one time that I think you're trying to get some credit for. But you know what? Over since 1991 till now, that doesn't hold up even that small bump, which was really good at the time, but it's been totally washed out to sea by what we did before that and since then.
Mr. Carr, do you have the data Representative Demmer is looking for?
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, as prior to 5124, we were at 5074 for 1 year. Prior to that, I believe we were at 5024 or 4924, somewhere in the around 5,000. Prior to that, we were in the high 4800s or so, and then prior to that, about 4600. So, and we can go get the exact history of that formula information, but roughly that's where we've been over time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Grill, that's good enough. Bottom line is we've seen increases on a per-student basis. And while you're here, you might want to answer, too. Can you give us the numbers on the number of students statewide that we've had, roughly commensurate with those years? And I'm looking for approximations because I know...
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, over that time we've had declining enrollment statewide, and I'd be guessing if I said, you know, it was in the probably 20 to 30,000 kids over that time, somewhere in that range.
So we've seen a decline of 20 to 30,000 kids in the time frame. So our funding on a per-student basis has been going up, but we've lost the number of kids that we've had. So is it safe to say that we've actually been increasing, relatively speaking, we've been increasing funding on a real basis? Now, I'm not talking about inflation or anything. I'm just taking dollars. We've been increasing the amount of dollars on a per-student basis in the state, and our commitment to kids on a per-student basis has been going up, and maybe not by some measure of inflation, but it's been going up by some percentage. Isn't that true?
Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, in total, yes.
Mr. Crow, one other question. The Consumer Price Index, do you know about that? Do you know what the Consumer Price Index has been? I know in the last, well, I'll just say what I know. I know in the last year or two it's been flat to down because I know Social Security increases have been non-existent. They're based on that. So I know Representative Greiling was talking about compared to inflation, the cost of everything going up. So she was talking about the cost of inflation and what that has been and how we've been keeping up. And I know since 91 we can discuss that. I also don't have it in front of me here, but Representative Greiling was talking about the changes in cost and the changes in funding in education and who's been responsible for what. And I think if you looked over the years as to who's been in the majority and you looked at the increases to education funding based on who's been in the majority, I think we're just shining very nicely on what the Republicans have done for education over that time frame. I don't have those numbers here, and I would be subject to challenge on that. And so one last question. I know there's lots. I got two more questions, actually. What, I know there was a comment made about, never mind. I'll let that one go. But I do want to know, Representative Greiling, you mentioned about ethanol subsidies. And I want to know what you know about that in relation to education since you brought that up in this conversation.
Representative Demmer. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Demmer. I don't know a heck of a lot about ethanol at all. But I bring it up because it's an example of another budget that goes out more bienniums, just like the new Minnesota Miracle.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, that's not true. In fact, other than the cuts that took place in ethanol subsidies when I was in the majority, and what's left on the, what we did is we cut and we tacked it at the end, save for those, we're done with ethanol subsidies. There aren't any in the state of Minnesota. So that's what the fact is, Representative Greiling, and I just thought that should be out there. And also, one last thing, ethanol is in our gas, not because of, it's because of the environmentalists, because of clean air, that's why it's there, it's an oxygenate. So a lot of people don't remember that either. But that's all I have for now, Mr. Chair, unless some of the things come to light that I have to ask about.
All right, Representative Demmer, we'll move on to Representative Anderson. I do have Reed and Marquardt on the list, and again, members, we do hope to take action on this by midnight. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if it's a late hour or what, but I kind of feel like Representative Greiling, you're trying to do a Jedi mind trick and saying that you know, we're going to be cutting this if we don't provide the funds, but yet you have no mechanism for funding it. So I'm just wondering if you, in looking at this, $600 million in 2014, $1.2 billion in 2015, $1.8 billion in 2016, and $2.4 billion in 2017, and the way I understand it, it's $2.4 billion ongoing. On top of that, so what do you plan on cutting? What do you plan on, what taxes do you plan on increasing to pay for this on top of the, I think it's, what are we up to, $5.2 billion budget deficit next year? So if you can just give me those details, what kind of runs that you've put together, what you have from your staff as far as addressing the financial obligation that this puts on the state.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, since the time is short, I'm not going to go into it at length, but of course, the budget and the total budget and how much is spent in each area of the budget would not be just my plan. It's done by the entire legislature. Just like we have the $7 billion budget problem for next year, counting inflation on both sides of the ledger, the whole legislature has to figure out, are we going to make more cuts in what? Are we going to keep whatever flat? Are we going to raise taxes? And you know what each area of the budget gets. And so that is not something that I would personally be planning. We don't have to have that yet. But what I am doing here in this bill and what the K-12 committee has and what the education committee or community has asked for, the PS Minnesota community, is that we prioritize education. We put it in the budget, and we figure those questions that you are answering out while prioritizing education, because as I've said a few times already, the current system isn't working very well for education for the kids, which are our seed corn.
Well, Representative Anderson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greiling, you know, I think if we're going to be committing the state to this funding, and, you know, I definitely prioritize education funding. That's part of the reasons why in the beginning of the session I said that we should be taking care of our budget deficit first and foremost. I don't know how you voted on that. We had an amendment on the floor, but I'll have to go back and check on that. But I do think that that is important for us to do, but I also think it's important that if we are going to be committing the state that we have an idea of how this is going to be paid for. You can't say you're going to have this, make this kind of promise, but then have no means of paying for it in the end. So, you know, I would like to see from you if you can provide some runs on what the tax increases will be, where else in the budget you plan on cutting. Maybe you plan on cutting Health and Human Services to accommodate this. I don't know what your plan is. And as, you know, this is coming through the tax committee, and this could potentially have tax implications, such as tax increases on who knows what, I think that we need to have that information before we even move forward with this bill. And I just assume that you would have it. And you know, what's been interesting for me is prior to session starting, you know, all your different school districts invite you to come in and talk about these different issues. And I remember in one school district, it was myself and a lot of my DFL colleagues that were there. And when they were asked about the Minnesota Miracle, your proposal, all of them said there's no way to fund it. So I'm just wondering, if they think that, and how is it you're going to do it? And that's why I want the details. If, you know, those members, and there was about seven of them, every single one of them to a T said there's no way to fund it. So that's why I'm looking for details today on how you plan to kind of cover this hole. If it's cut, if it's tax increases, if it's a combination, or what?
Representative Grabbing, and then we'll...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I gave my answer already.
All right. Representative Rood.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
That was not an answer. She did not answer my question. My question is, what is your plan? So where are your runs? Where are you going to cut? Where are you going to increase taxes? That's all I'm asking. I don't think that's a hard question for you to answer.
Representative Greiling.
Obviously, you thought about how you're going, what you're going to fund and put this package together, but you don't have the other side of the equation.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Anderson, I don't want to get into a debate when we've got 10 minutes left of the committee. I answered you that would be a legislative
decision.
Mr.
Chair.
Representative Anderson, please let Representative Greiling respond, and then I'll call on you.
And that would be more than one I could propose by one legislative answer, but I'm here with a bill on behalf of our committee. And I don't think that's fruitful for that many years out for you to hear what I might want to do. I don't even know what the circumstances would be then, and if it got to be that we still had a no new taxes mantra here, you know, and the economy did not improve, then it might have to be voted out further. So I think it's too early to tell Representative Anderson in a detail. But my plan would definitely be a balanced one, so that we didn't just have education remain flat as we're doing right now.
Representative Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, my responsibility is to the constituents that I represent, not to a committee, not to a bill. It's to the constituents that I represent. And I don't want to give them, tell them that something is going to happen when we have no way of knowing what the funds are going to be in the first place. Not that it can't happen, but I do think that if we are going to plan for this, I know that I have heard from school districts time and time again who have said, you know, legislature promises this and then they don't deliver. So I don't want to be promising something and then find out that a future legislature, whether you and I are here or not, fails to fulfill that promise. So I think at the very least, we should have the data available to figure this out. And if we can't figure that out today, I don't think that we should move forward with this bill at this moment until you have that data available. So, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move to table the bill at this moment, please.
There's been a motion to table.
And I would like a roll call as well, please.
With a roll call. Motion to table is not debatable. We will take the roll.
Franceschi.
No.
Anderson.
Aye.
Broad.
Yes.
Carlson.
No.
Davids.
Yes.
Dabney.
No.
Demmer.
Yes.
Doe. Dietrich.
No.
Downey.
Yes.
Eastland. Gardner.
No.
Brothwell.
No.
Hillstrom.
No.
Heenan.
No.
Coles.
Yes.
Lanning. Lesh.
Nay.
Liebling.
No.
Loughlin.
No.
Loon.
Yes.
Marquardt.
No.
Mallory.
No.
Murphy.
No.
Reiner.
No.
Rukavina. Rude.
No.
Solberg. Tilbury.
No.
Zellers.
Aye.
Dill. Eastland. Lanning. Rukavina. Solberg.
Being 8 ayes and 17 nays, the motion to table fails. Representative Garland, do you want to do some quick closing comments, and then we'll call for a roll on the bill as amended?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the support of the committee and look forward to working with all of you as we plan for this prioritizing of our students in the future.
All right. Sasha, would you take the roll on the bill as amended? No roll call? All right. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Bill passes. Can I have a motion to pass the minutes? any corrections or additions? There is one correction on the date. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes pass. And Madam Chair, members, before you flee the room, the chair has an announcement.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, I know everyone's trying to leave, but I do want to just take 1 minute, really, if we can, for committee members. We are not going to meet in taxes again this year, probably. The only way we will is if the stadium makes it to through a few committees and gets here. Let's hope not. But if it does, we'll come back. But I do, members, I just have to not let us adjourn without a couple comments here that, you know, really, there may be some more announcements, but Representative Coles and Representative Eastland, who's not here, Representative Demmer and Representative Broad have been incredible tax committee members, and they're not going to be with us here next year, no matter who's in charge. And I think we all owe it bipartisanly to thank these members. I just personally have to say Representative Emmer and I have worked very closely on Green Acres, sat on conference committees, TIF subcommittees, and it's been a pleasure. Representative Coles, you've been great at laughing at yourself after you put us through the paces, whether it's duct tape on your mouth or whatever. And, you know, Representative Broad, we're all better for your diligence and vigilance. You're keeping us on our toes all the time, and the tax committee, I think I can say for anybody here that we're going to miss you guys. I mean, it's been a real pleasure to have you all here.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, if there's anything else, we're adjourned.